he tweeted about it, and that was so. That's when it sort of became to the public's attention. So I mean, it all started around that same week. Actually, it was probably early. It was early December that the actual filming began.
The book is nearly 450 pages. How do you wrap that up and give people a full understanding of who Roger Ebert was in just a couple of hours?
Well, you know, I have a history of making longer films, and so believe me, the temptation was to want to do a miniseries to really capture fully what the memoir is about. But, you know, I think what you have to do is you have to make some hard choices about what to include and what not to include. And because Roger's life was really, really full. And so people seeing this film who know Roger or read the memoir, I think I hope will still very much love the film and respect the choices that we made. But, you know, you could easily make a whole other feature on Roger. And so I really tried to use, though, the book as a guide and as to who to interview, who were the really important people in his life, and what were the bigger, most important sort of moments and life-changing moments in his life.
Having said that, I assume you have a lot of footage that you couldn't include. I would assume one day with a DVD, maybe there would be some extra footage.
Oh, absolutely. We've got so many great stories and footage of Roger, but also stories from the people that we interviewed. You know, we have this one literally 10-minute long story that Roger Simon, who used to work at the Sun-Times with Roger, tells. He recounts a story that Roger used to tell, and it literally takes 10 minutes to tell the whole story. It's a great story, but it was too long for the film. But we have tons of things like that.
Now, you may have been planning things this way last April, tough day for a lot of people, April 4th. How did you brace for the possibility that we might lose Roger, and did the scope of the film change when he passed away?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. When we started, I thought that I was going to be documenting, in terms of his present day-to-day life, the ways in which Roger had completely sort of overcome all of what he had been through and was living an extremely vibrant life of going to screenings and throwing dinner parties and attending events. And that didn't happen because when we began filming was around the time that he first went into the hospital with a fractured hip. So it did change the film. But, you know, and I think that when you see the film, you will see that it is a significant part of the film, that you understand that you are seeing the last 4 months of Roger's life. But I think what really stood out for me was just the spirit, the sense of humor, the passion, the stubbornness, all of the qualities that Roger had that we would have captured in that other film that I had in mind are all very much in evidence, even though it is the last 4 months of his life.
Was the editing of this really taxing, knowing that this might happen, that we might lose him?
Well, you know, when I first showed up to do the first shoot with him, when I came into the room, he was asleep. And I have to say, it was a pretty bracing image because I had not seen Roger asleep. I had not seen him not sort of with his public face and all ready for the public before. But as soon as he woke up, and this is a moment you actually see in the movie, when he woke up and he smiled, it was Roger again. And I think that there absolutely in this film, there are things that you will see that are hard to watch. And I think it's a tribute to Roger and to Chaz that he wanted us to capture the full reality of his life. And, you know, I can't think of another person of his stature and celebrity that has been that candid and open. And so I think it makes for a stronger film and a more revealing film about who Roger was.
This weekend at Sundance, you're also screening, it's the 20th anniversary of Hoop Dreams, correct?
Yes.
Will that be kind of emotional for you? Because this is the film that established the connection between you and Roger Ebert, as well as Gene Siskel.
Oh, absolutely. I can't think of a more sort of, for me, a more poetically apt pairing than to be back at Sundance 20 years after Hoop Dreams premiered there, where, as you say, Roger and Gene were the first and greatest champions of that film. So to be back there 20 years later with a film about Roger is overwhelming. And the thing that you have to understand is that, you know, Roger wasn't just a champion of Hoop Dreams. He remained a very strong voice, critical voice, with the work that I made after Hoop Dreams. You know, 3 years ago, I was at Sundance with a film called The Interrupters, and on the opening night of the film festival, he tweeted about it. We had sent him a screener, and he tweeted on the opening night of the film festival and said some wonderful things about the film. And he knew exactly what he was doing and the timing of what he was doing. And he was a real champion of that film for a solid year. So I just feel like this chance to go back to Sundance to celebrate Hoop Dreams' 20th anniversary and to do it with a film about Roger is, I don't know, it's sort of the such a fitting sort of bookend to Hoop Dreams.
Do you have a favorite Ebert review outside of, you know, his write-ups about your own work?
I don't even read any of the others. You know, I
okay.
only read the ones about
yeah.
me. Well, I mean, it's hard to single out a single review, but there's a couple that we feature in the film in some small way, which I think are sort of kind of typical and of his sort of quality as a writer. And by no means, you know, are unique examples. You know, he wrote thousands upon thousands of reviews. But, you know, some of his early reviews that I went back and read that we feature Bonnie and Clyde and reviews like Cries and Whispers. And I looked, you know, very closely at reviews of films like Nashville back when in the earlier stages of his career. And it's extraordinary what a mature writer he is at that young of age. He does not seem to be a writer in his 20s writing about film.
Is there anything, one or two things that really surprised you about, not necessarily even having to do with the movies, about what you learned about Roger with all the interviews you've done?
The biggest sort of surprise, because I just didn't know that much about Roger, and I got it from the memoir, but it was totally reinforced by making the movie, is that Roger, you know, he titled his memoir Life Itself, I think, for a very good reason, which is that he led an extraordinary life. And yes, it included the movies, obviously. They were a huge part of his life and why we know who he is today. But he had an extraordinary life apart from the movies, too. You know, he came from a very humble background in Champaign, Urbana, moved to the big city, and started his career here, and had tremendous adventures in Europe with his best buddy, John McHugh. He battled alcoholism and succeeded in putting that behind him. He had quite a vivid bachelor life. And then, of course, he had this amazing third act with the illness and how he dealt with that. And in a way, it's sort of like the movies, and Roger the movie critic, which is so important part of who he is just part of the story of who Roger Ebert was. And I think that was probably the kind of single biggest revelation for me.